You are listening to a sermon by Jörg Breaker, recorded on Sunday, June 11th, 2023, at Point Grey Intermennonite Fellowship in Vancouver, British Columbia. The opinions expressed by the speakers are not necessarily those of the church. This recording is licensed for personal use by individuals only and may not be copied, broadcast, or redistributed without the prior permission of the church board. For more information, please visit our website at www.pgrmf.org.
Yes, I bring you greetings, in fact, of the Mennonite World Conference. In some ways, this is almost like a prolonged World Fellowship Sunday. This year, we celebrate it again in March, as many of Mennonite World Conference are visiting churches in BC. And today, the topic that was chosen by our brothers and sisters in Africa was Jesus Christ, our hope, and it still is. And I think it still is also the topic of this service we celebrate together, although we follow a different text. This text was not chosen for World Mennonite World Conference. In Europe, we are horrified that again we live in times of war. But the war in Ukraine reminds us that the time since the Second World War has not been a time of peace in many regions in the world. Some have been living in realities of war over the last decades. It just hits closer when we feel thrown back into realities that we thought we had overcome. We are caught up in dynamics that we thought belonged to the past, and we realize the struggle to overcome violence is not a stairway where we climb up step by step and always get closer to the top. Yet the roads to peace sometimes find their start in the midst of most violent times. The books of Samuel mirror something of these times of war, of leaders led by ideologies and ideals trying to secure the rulership of the good ones, even of God's chosen. And as in our wars of today, the costs paid by people are often ignored. These stories I find are dark and often slippery. For example, the victory of David over Goliath has become iconic, but are we aware that it actually solidifies an image of a warrior God defeating and killing his enemies by God's chosen ones? When I try to read these stories, I look for other icons. They're almost hidden, but clearly they're there. There are a few remarkable stories of women that contrast this world of war. Mothers who cannot and do not want to ignore the costs of these unholy wars, who tell another God story. The books open up with Hannah, the longtime childless mother. She sings of God's strength who breaks the bow of the heroes. She sets us on a path to look for this God breaking the bows of heroes. We find these signs with Abigail, who teaches David the ways of conflict resolution that breaks the cycles of violence. Like in a diptych, the story of Abigail and Nabal is placed between the two stories where David encounters Saul and refuses to lay hands on him. And we find another remarkable story of a mother concluding the two books of Samuel. It is this story that we look at today. It is a story full of ambiguities, but a story that might set us on a new path. The beginning of the story of Rizpah is a sign of hope. David seeks to heal the wounds of the past and make amends for the horrors of the past. Today, we might not see a famine as caused by past guilt, although the notion is not too unfamiliar. It is our mismanagement in the past that causes today floods, heat waves, and droughts. And we know that traumatic events of the past can hang over a community like a cloud, suddenly bursting out into new conflict and violence, and leads to new traumas and injustices. In order that we are able to break the cycles of violence, we must name and bring to light the crimes and injustices of the past, those that are still hanging like shadows over us or burning like an underground fire that might flare up any moment. When David consults God like an oracle, he learns of an old guilt. Saul had broken a covenant with the tribe of the Gibeonites in a religiously motivated genocide, as we would call it today. He had attempted to wipe out the tribe that was not part of the people of Israel, despite the covenant of protection that Joshua had made with them when he conquered the land. So here God actually sets sides with the victims of a foreign nation and does not back up this idea of genocide in the name of God. David does not approach the Gibeonites with a made-up proposition of his own. He sits down with them, with those who have lost sons and daughters, brothers and sisters. So he sits down with the victims and asks, what would be good in your eyes? What would do you good? But here the story gets slippery. The Gibeonites cloth up, disguise their demand for vindication as a religious ritual. We do not want anything for ourselves, not money, no one shall be killed because of us, but God must be satisfied. And so they transfer the demand for vengeance to God. Seven sons of Saul are to be killed, but not only killed, they are to be exposed, impaled, crucified, before God's face on the mountain of the Lord. The bodies are to be left on the mountain week after week, these exposed in their decay, left to weather and vultures. It seems they want that God sees and looks upon that guilt has been paid for. The mothers, Rizpah and Michal, must watch helplessly. But Rizpah does not accept this religious exaltation of the murder of her sons. From the beginning of the harvest to its ends, when the rains should set in, so for several months, she stays on the mountainside. She scares away the birds and wild animals. Day and night, she lives in the wilderness. She fights against the humiliation of her sons, and she makes public her mourning. Behold the humanity of these killed. Behold the lives. Behold the man. Her watch may seem like an impotent protest. In this religiously war-filled world, there is little room for dissent. She intrudes. She does not accept the mythification of their death and decay. With her public mourning, Rizpah forces David and the Gibeonites to look upon these sacrificed bodies as persons killed, lives forcefully ended. Her mournful watch holds up the dignity and holiness of these lives that have been violated. She puts the display on display. So her mourning points to this unbridgeable contradiction in this horrible idea of human sacrifice. Human sacrifice to appease God. Such a ritual is only possible if one closes the eye before the fact that life is extinguished here. Life in the name of the very one who brought these persons, these sons, into being. Rizpah's mourning is a silent protest, but it cries out to heaven. And yet, Rizpah cannot be sure against whom is she actually protesting. She doesn't know whether she actually protests against God, who seems so completely on the side of those who want to atone for the breach of the covenant in this way. She breaks into the sanctuary of the holy sacrifices and risks having her grief denounced as blasphemy. In the confusion of politics and religious and mythical interpretations, she does not see clear where to find God in this horror. Does God really stand behind this kind of atonement? But in her mourning, she holds on to the threat to which God has connected himself, that every God, that every human being is created in the image of God. And therefore, humanity itself is sacred. In her grief, she does not let go of the belief that her son's humanity is sacred and must not be violated. Her persistence brings David to his senses. Too late, me white, you might say. The deaths of her sons cannot be unmade. But Rizpah's intervention is not ineffective. David has the bones buried. He brings them down from the mountain of the Lord, as they name it. He stops instrumentalizing them and sets them at rest. Earth covers their exposure. Burying the dead means respecting their dignity, not exposing them in their decay. The grave is also a place of remembrance, but here they are remembered with their life, with the life they lived. And only now, at the very end, after all this, it is said that God heeded to the petitions. The way the narrative runs, it seems that the watch and protest of Rizpah has been introduced to change the course of an older story. It could be that the conclusion after that, God heeded supplications for the land, actually followed right after the first part. The ritual killing is carried out. The seven sons are hung out before God. Everything is done as the king commands, and God sees the breach of the covenant as atoned for and shows mercy again. But the protest of Rizpah squeezes itself into this story, and thus it changes the meaning. Only now, after David pays honor to the dignity of these people, and thus in some way recants the act. Now, only now does God allow himself to be petitioned for the land. When we reread the story, we see that nowhere God commanded these human sacrifices. David and the Gibeonites think that God requires it, but it is their solution to the problem of guilt. When the narrator shifts this phrase to the end, God does not respond until the ritual sacrifices are no longer on display before him. He does not look with favor on the killing of these innocent ones. Indeed, he rejects it. God does not back up his notion that a crime can be repaid with a new atrocity. When God takes the side of Rizpah, shares her pain and protest, I find him also standing with the women standing at the cross. mother and friends of Jesus, enduring in that unbearable pain to see a loved one tortured to death. This ending of the story of Rizpah leads me to ask, does God really approve that one has to be sacrificed for the good of all, or that God even demanded such a sacrifice? I certainly hear him protest when we use the death of God's own to justify the sacrificial death of soldiers, of slaves, and of all those whose death we deem necessary for the good of all. Yes, God endures that the world kills the one who reveals to the world a God who unconditionally loves and forgives. And thus, this is not outside of God's will, or this death is not outside of God's will. But I believe that the raising of Jesus from the death shows us this God who protests against the dehumanization of a human being, against instrumentalizing them for the goals of ideologies or religions. When God raises Jesus from the death, God accepts the life of Jesus as a perfect gift. He accepts and confirms that Jesus lives his life completely for the good of the world and gives himself with this life for the life of the world. In this sense, the life he lived is a sacrifice, a gift that acknowledges that all life comes from God and belongs to him. The world wants to annihilate such a life, the presence of God in this life from the world. I believe that the resurrection of Jesus reveals the meaning of sacrifice, a free gift of God, of God's self, to gather us into God's presence. A free gift of God's self to gather us into God's presence. With the raising of Jesus, God shouts objection against any ritual dehumanization of your human life. With the resurrection, God breaks the violent cycle of guilt and atonement. He freely gives new life and reconciles the world to himself. It is forgiveness that opens new ways of a communal life, not paying debts by new acts of violence. With Rizpah, I feel called and encouraged to hold on this thread, that every human being is sacred to God. And here I see hope in this difficult story, that if we hold on to this thread, we will ultimately find the face of God. May the peace of God be with us. Amen.